welcome to the Law and Justice Podcast. If you're a regular listener or just new today, please be noted that from now I will come with a brand new episode on the first day of each month, and you can listen to me at 8 o'clock in the morning. But yes, you can listen to my podcast anytime, anywhere for free. To listen to my episodes, please follow and subscribe to my podcast. To choose the best platform to listen my episodes, please have a look on today's episode details. And yes, in exceptional cases, I will come with special episodes each month, but you have to check my Instagram to stay updated. Today, I have a special episode with a special guest, and I know many of you already know her, as I got response after my social media post. So I've got the opportunity to interview Professor Natasha Radcliffe-Thomas from British School of Fashion. And today's episode is titled Sustainability and Diversity in Fashion. If you are connected to her on Instagram, you should know that she has loads of contents on sustainable fashion, which is very authentic and inspiring. If you're interested in fashion, you might know that British School of Fashion has a long tradition of conducting research that is economically and socially relevant, applying new knowledge to problems of global significance. Their academic staff in London have a range of expertise in fashion business, luxury brands, marketing, management, finance, public health, and risk management. The university also offers a range of research and consultancy services to help businesses develop and innovate. They offer support for consumer and market research, focus group analysis, and assistance with new product development. The British School of Fashion has a thriving community of researchers who support research across fashion business and collaborate with researchers in different academic areas at their Glasgow and London campuses. Sustainability is the key area in their teaching, consultancy, and research programs. So I have searched this information from their website. You can get the website link from my episode details if you're interested. All right, I'm welcoming Professor Natasha Radcliffe to my show. Good morning, ma'am.
Hi, thank you so much. What a lovely introduction as well.
All right. And it's my pleasure, it's an opportunity and honor for me to have you here on my podcast. And I also pleased, especially from my LinkedIn, I got a very good response, and many of my audience and followers connections know you already. I must share one very good experience with you. I got a proposal from your Caledonian campus, where one professor contacted me. She just commented on my post that one of her students doing PhD on modest fashion, modest outfits. So she is very interested to share her ideas and to collaborate. And actually, I shared a post on Instagram about my upcoming book on modest fashion, which is also relevant to actually sustainability. Anyway,
amazing.
So yes. It's really interesting, and personally, I love to connect with scholars because their statements, their knowledge, their experiences are very much important for us to develop, especially when you talk about fashion, sustainability. I think we must prioritize what our experts say, what our scholars say. Like, when you say something, I take it more as authentic, because I know you have done your research and I know you are an expert in your field. So to improve our fashion industry, to promote diversity, or what do you say, inclusivity, and to achieve our sustainability goal under the Paris Agreement, under COP26, we actually need to listen to our scholars, our experts, science, and we must come forward and take collective efforts. Well, so I'm going to ask you some questions. What do you think about the sustainable revolution? How our sustainability goal can be achieved, and how faith-based brands can come together to promote sustainability and diversity?
Great. Well, thank you so much, you know, for the introduction to the podcast. And that's a really big question there. So I think one of the things I'd like to start with saying is fashion isn't just one thing. I mean, you'll be aware of that. We each have sort of personal relationships with fashion. Every time we choose how to dress ourselves, we're making decisions about how we promote our identity to, you know, to the world, how we feel about ourselves. And, you know, by our purchases or by making clothes and engaging, you know, with fashion, we have a whole range of different relationships. As well as that, obviously, fashion is a big global industry. So sometimes when we're talking about fashion, it's kind of important to understand which bit we're talking about. And I think the challenges that we have at the moment is, as an industry, the global fashion industry is a huge one. It's extremely impactful. It's an exploitative one, I'm afraid to say, and it's an extremely extractive industry, because fashion products rely on a lot of natural resources. They also use a lot of sort of chemicals and, you know, synthetic processes. They rely on a lot of human labor at different stages, whether it's, you know, textile production, whether it's manufacturing, and it has a lot of impact in things like carbon because of shipping and also things like packaging. And it was interesting to me, I'm a big fan of the Ellen MacArthur Foundation and their sort of ideas around circular economy, which really intersect well with the idea of sustainable fashion. And when they were looking at the sort of damage that industries are doing to the world, they looked at plastics first and then they looked at fashion. So that just shows you the scale of the problem. So I just wanted to sort of highlight that first. And then I think what's been interesting for me is, in the last few years, I think more and more of us in the industry and outside have understood how sustainability should be understood as a sort of multi-dimensional concept. So I think initially, for a lot of people, we think about sustainability and the environment, and clearly that's extremely important. But a lot of people haven't sort of made so many of the connections between sort of environment and climate justice, as you mentioned, and also aspects around social sustainability and social justice, and that would include racial justice. So I think we're getting to have a much more nuanced understanding about how, you know, everyday activity like buying clothes or getting dressed actually is part of a huge system that has a variety of impacts, some of them quite negative. So that's, sorry, quite a long preamble, but I just wanted to sort of situate the conversation in that sort of understanding. So your question, I think, is really, you know, about a couple of different things. One of them is really about diversity in fashion, and one of them is about, you know, sustainability in relation to faith-based sort of fashion. So one thing I would say, during the pandemic, a lot of us have had time to reflect on our professional and personal choices. The fashion industry has been held under, you know, a big magnifying glass, looking at its practices. And one of the really shocking occurrences during the early stages of the pandemic was when a lot of primarily fast fashion brands cancelled orders that they'd placed in the global south. And this led to really direct sort of financial and social impacts on a lot of people involved at the sort of early stages of the supply chain in the factories in places like Bangladesh. And it really showcased, I suppose, the power that some of the big brands have over people's everyday livelihoods, the fact that they could cancel orders, withdraw finance, and immediately plunge a whole you know, group of people into abject, you know, poverty. And I think it's been really positive to see a lot of the public getting behind a sort of social activism of groups like the, you know, Clean Clothes Campaign and Fashion Revolution, when they ask questions of fashion, like, you know, around who made my clothes and, you know, and putting pressure to implement policies, you know, like living wages and et cetera. So I think some of these aspects are things that we really need to understand and unpack if we want to be a truly, you know, sustainable fashion industry. But I think, I'm not sure if your question is relating, you know, maybe more to individuals with small brands and labels, because I think sometimes that's, it's harder to see how you as an individual or a small label could actually have an impact on this really big global industry. And again, I think one of the interesting things over the past few years is that I think especially through social media, a lot of smaller brands are able to find a space, to find a niche and able to express their creativity, you know, through fashion. But also social media, as you've already alluded to, can be a good place to actually learn about some of the issues behind sustainability. So I actually sort of think educating oneself, you know, in informal spaces and joining, you know, partnerships and groups of like-minded people is a really good way to start thinking about sustainability, because I think you need to have a little bit of that education before you can take action.
Right. Thank you. And as a owner of a brand, actually, I recently launched an online-based fashion brand with a sustainable modest fashion brand. And I actually believe in sustainability and diversity. That's why from my passion, I start my brand. So actually, I want to promote sustainability and modesty, or what do you call diversity, globally. And my theme is, slogan is that modest fashion beyond face. I mean, modest fashion can be adopted by any women. Since I'm actually working for women's clothing and accessories, since it's a women's wear brand anyway. So I think faith-based brands can come with innovative ideas and to promote diversity. And they have a greater role to play because the consumers in modest fashion industry are actually booming in recent years, especially in UK. It's not just the Muslim women, women of any religion, or faith, or even many women who don't believe in any faith love to practice modesty, or what we call modest fashion. So I think here is a greater role to play for the modest fashion brands. And we can promote both charms at the same time. And actually, modesty or fashion, they are actually interlinked, and fashion is linked to everywhere, in politics, in personal life, in business. Recently, I noticed our MP from this area has shared that she gets very abusive comments, which are very Islamophobic, since she is a hijab-wearing woman. And she's the first hijab-wearing woman in UK Parliament. So she said many people don't take it positively, and she is facing lots of abusive comments, behavior, threats. So I think the brands have a very important role to play to promote diversity from this context. I think most brands don't study how actually they should offer modest fashion to their consumers and how they should promote. Because whether it is fast fashion, whether it is just glamorous fashion, or whether it is modest fashion, the brands actually try to promote sexual objectification. I have learned, I have observed, I've experienced. So I think they have to actually study more. They have to do more research on how they should promote diversity and how they can address these issues like Islamophobic or any other bias that minority groups face.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I think I'm really sorry to hear about the local MP's experience. That's really unpleasant to hear. But it does show you, in a sense, you know, the power of, I wouldn't say fashion in this instance, but clothing. So that clothing does signify, you know, each culture, each society has, you know, clothing traditions and norms that are recognizable. And in a sense, you know, it shows you the power that clothing has to sort of provoke reactions. Obviously, in this instance, really, you know, a horrible incident. And that's something that's really a shame to hear about in modern times. But what I would say, just sort of going back to the trying to be a bit, take a bit more positive take on this, I think, you know, fashion and clothing can be a really empowering space, specifically, you know, for women and for women founders, so as yourself. So finding a space to, you know, create a brand that expresses, you know, your feelings, your desires, your aesthetics, and lots of those are based in cultural heritage. And cultural heritage is an area of sustainability that I'm really fascinated by. You know, that different parts of the world and different communities have tremendous, you know, histories of textiles, of embroidery, of clothing skills. And I think a lot of people in the modern time are really looking to those and to celebrate those and and as you say, to share them. So they don't stay necessarily just within that community, but they have opportunities to share them. And it's one of the things that, you know, I really enjoy sharing with our students. So just last week, we had a founder of a social enterprise in India coming in to talk to us about her business, which is helping support local communities of women in India. That the brand's called Mithil Asmita, and it's, they celebrate their textile tradition, which is grounded in their faith, but they create products like, you know, scarves and accessories based on that. And they're bringing those, you know, into different markets so people can appreciate the skills and the artisanship. And I think it's, you know, it's one of the areas that where we can have more positive stories. You know, fashion is about culture. Fashion is about storytelling. But as you say, it's also about, you know, politics, I would say, with a small p. And so some of these, you know, issues around social and racial justice can be tackled by positive interventions through fashion as well. I think that gives a lot of opportunities. But what I would say, and it relates to a word you mentioned earlier, is authenticity. So what I think we want to see and what consumers want to see is authentic moves. So whether it comes from communities, whether it comes from Indigenous people, you know, that's going to be how land in a more authentic way than if you have a great big brand just sort of cherry picking bits of people's culture and then presenting them back to them. And that's not going to work. But it kind of reminds me that, you know, diversity is going to come from within. So if, you know, our institutions and our organizations need to be diverse themselves, then we hear a variety of voices. And then you're also less likely to stumble into these sort of cultural mistakes that you've, you know, alluded to with communications, because, you know, if they come from authentic multicultural voices, then I think they're going to be more powerful and more creative.
Yes, definitely. And as I already mentioned, our MP, Afsana Begum, who is an MP for Limehouse and Poplar, she is actually a very nice lady, I must say. And she always talks about social issues, empowerment of women. I personally contacted her about domestic abuse issues, and she very nicely replied to my email. And I know she's personally a very nice person, and I was very shocked to see her Twitter post yesterday. And I actually made a short video to share my solidarity with her. And it's really concerning. She is an MP and she's facing these things. So how about us? Now I will feel scared to go outside because I may be attacked or I may be attacked online as well. So it's really scary. So fashion brands has a role to play here. They must make it normal. They must make diversity and modesty normal. Not just the consumers, not just the minority groups or Muslims or any other social groups. Modesty is not just an Islamic thing. All other religions also talk about it, but more or less, actually. So I think we need to focus on that. Brands need to focus on that. Educators need to focus on that. Like when you teach your students, please focus on that. Please try to.
Sure. I mean, I think, yeah. Sorry to interrupt you. I mean, obviously the area that I work in is sustainability and also in marketing. Now, one of the key things about marketing that people sometimes misunderstand, they think that marketing is the same as advertising. But actually, marketing is about understanding the market. So one of the key things is about curiosity and about doing your research. So not to get away from the responsibility of brands, but just to say one of their responsibilities is to listen to the consumers. And I think what is quite interesting and positive is that actually younger consumers, you know, across different, you know, beliefs and not just one specific group, but, you know, people are actually demanding more from brands, but that will include, you know, the voice for modest fashion, for example. So I think that's, you know, if you're, you know, really engaged in marketing in a responsible way, you are listening to those different voices and you're, you know, responding to them, you know, authentically with products, with promotional materials that really match you know, their requirements, their needs and wants. And I think one of the things we've seen over the last few years in fashion and beauty is that people want to celebrate diversity. They want to see a range of different, and it's not just, you know, in race, but it's shapes, sizes, it's ability, it's age. So, and I think we've have seen, and I think actually the beauty space has been a place for this. We've have seen a lot more, you know, it's nowhere, we're not there yet, but we have seen a lot more visibility. But one thing I would say as well, and this picks up on the British School of Fashion actually hosted just before the lockdown, a panel in collaboration with the British Beauty Council looking at just these types of questions. It was a sort of industry think tank, very interesting and powerful session. You know, and from that, a lot of people were saying, OK, well, we're seeing diversity in front of the camera, but where's the diversity behind the camera? So basically, you know, you know, the activities of brands in this area shouldn't just be, you know, the promotions that we see, but change needs to be sort of internal as well. And I think, you know, what's interesting to me, I was up at the COP26 conference, as you know, is to see that these conversations about social justice and about environmental justice are being taken seriously by a lot of people in the fashion industry. And people are creating positions around diversity. They're creating programs for internal sort of training and development around, you know, things like, you know, gender and race. And I think that's a really, you know, positive thing to see. So you know, I think we should, you know, reward where we see good practice as much as, you know, calling out when we see the, you know, the opposite. But I think, you know, one thing is that fashion does reflect culture, and so it has a positive place to play in you know, pushing for more equality and for, you know, social and climate justice. And for me personally, because I'm very, very old, you know, it's interesting to see, because these conversations were not happening previously in fashion. You know, it wasn't about this. It was all about hemlines and new fabrics and silhouettes and designers. But now, you know, these conversations are happening across the pages of Vogue, for example. So, I mean, I think it's you know, we are in a new space with the fashion industry, and I hope that it just, you know, progresses forward in a more positive way.
Yeah, definitely. And I would like to add here, as you were talking about marketing, conducting research on consumer behaviors, on consumers. So I would like to add, you might know the name of Halima Aden, who is a hijab-wearing woman. And she stopped her modeling career recently. Just because she thought the industry does not actually give the freedom to her to practice her religion or religious norms, and she had to compromise her religion. That's why she had to stop her career. But recently, she again start contact with Modernisa, which is a Turkish company, modest fashion company, and another model and editor of Vogue Scandinavia, Rauda, who is known as Raudis on Instagram. So she also shared her concern that fashion brands actually don't do their research properly to understand the demands and the behavior of the modest fashion consumers. And some brands don't do their research at all. So she was very much concerned. Anyway.
Yeah, and I think you're quite right. And because often, you know, what tends to happen is this sort of, I suppose it's tokenism, isn't it? So people will often have, okay, well, we've got this one model and she can represent the whole, you know, community and not really thinking beyond that. So I think it's a shame to see and to hear those stories of those women's experiences. But I do think that those conversations are happening in fashion. And what I would say for people as consumers is to, you know, reward the brands and businesses that you think are doing good work. And that might be brands that come, you know, from communities. And if you don't feel that big brands are representing and, you know, honouring the kind of fashion that you want, then don't give them your attention, I guess, is one way. I mean, the consumer does to a certain degree have the power of the purse, but we must also recognise that these issues are kind of systemic and structural, and not be naive and think that by buying a T-shirt or something, we're changing the world, because, you know, that's not really how things operate. We know that. We know that these things are structural and systemic, and we're operating under these. I mean, you know, systems, we need to sort of have those deep understandings around that as well. But yeah, I mean, unfortunately, as I said earlier, fashion is an extremely exploitative industry across a whole range of its activities. And in a sense, it's been allowed to be because of the glamour side of it that you mentioned earlier. And it sort of covers up a plethora of bad practices, which is a shame. And I think that's, but again, as it's a global industry, it's happening in multiple facets. So when we talk about fashion as a monolith, you know, then it's difficult to have a solution. And that's maybe where we need to look at things like media and practices, and actually models are quite exploited, as I'm sure you're aware. So I think it's, you know, protecting those sort of areas and activities and occupations is quite important, and having codes of conduct as well that would help people feel comfortable in the work that they're doing. So I think there's definitely sort of regulation, if not you know, legal, you know, recourse that needs to be looked at to make sure that people are working. If we think about the SDGs, one of which is decent work, I mean, that should apply to everyone working in fashion, whether they're at a sewing machine, they're designing, you know, they're part of retail, they're modelling, you know. So I think the SDGs provided quite a good framework for us to reflect on how are different organisations responding to and fulfilling those commitments.
Yes, definitely. And you just mentioned fashion is the most exploitative industry, and I totally agree with this. And I would like to share that I'm actually writing a book on fashion, especially I would like to focus on fast fashion and the darkest side of the fashion industry. And the title of the book is Fashion, the Dirtiest Industry. So here, actually, I'm going to show how fashion is exploiting women, especially. People might know fashion industry is promoting women empowerment, but actually, I'm actually born in Bangladesh, and here I have settled in UK. So I know how people, especially women, are being exploited every second. They work from early morning, from 6 o'clock, and they go home at 11, 12 o'clock. And sometimes, most often, they actually have to work a whole day and night, but they are not paid in time. And sometimes they are not paid at all. And sometimes they are paid like in 3 months gaps. So most of them face sexual assaults. They don't even can't afford to manage their daily foods, and they can't even send their children to schools, better schools or colleges, and their lifestyle is just tragic, just shocking. I have personally met and seen many of them. So most of them actually live in like slums in city areas. You might know the capital, Dhaka, of Bangladesh. It is a very polluted area, polluted city, and the slums are the most polluted areas. You can just imagine, but these people mostly live in those slums, and you can't just imagine how human rights conditions are shocking. Human rights violations are very frequent there. So after the Rana Plaza accident, the fashion industry took it seriously. Consumers took it seriously. Rana Plaza is not very far from my place. I used to live in Dhaka, the capital, and Rana Plaza is very close to that area. So more than thousands of people were dead after the accident, and their families are totally broken, shocked, devastated. But brands didn't pay them. Actually, so I think fashion brands have to focus on that, and as consumers, we have to focus on our personal behavior, consumer practice. So as I'm actually working on fashion industry, I'm totally a newcomer, but I am doing my research. I have been doing my research for years actually, and I have been observing the fashion industry since my high school life. And from that time, I was dreaming I have to be a brand owner, and I have to focus on these areas. So my focus is actually on sustainability, diversity. And another point is I want to address the objectification that is very, very alarming in fashion industry, in media. And I read a number of articles by WHO where they mentioned that the objectification in media, in fashion industry, especially they've mentioned in media, this actually affects our mental health, the mental health of girls, of women, even men, our young children. So we need to actually focus on that. And when I came to know about EU, I saw your contents, your work, and I also visited the website of London School of Fashion. So I thought I have to work with them. Since you love to collaborate, I saw it, and maybe I will have to collaborate soon with EU or with London School of Fashion.
Great. Sorry, I just wanted to pick up on a couple of things that you talked about there, because I mean, really, thank you for sharing your personal insights and experience from Bangladesh. And that, you know, I was alluding to the pay up campaign, which happened through the beginning of the pandemic when, you know, the Western fashion brands cancelled orders with the factories, yeah, and plunged more people into kind of destitution. But I also wanted to say, you know, for people in the UK, we sometimes feel like these problems are happening in other, you know, parts of the world and that everything's fine at home. But, you know, some, you know, you might be aware that we had the Boohoo scandal in Leicester, where we had people, you know, also involved in sweatshops being paid, you know, £3.50 an hour. So it's a global problem. But also what I'd like to say is that there's some really good sustainable fashion practices in places like Bangladesh. So somebody who I've worked with, Maher Anjum, and she's from Bangladesh as well, and she's actually done research about good practices in, you know, there's some really good green factories as well. So I think, you know, we must shine a light on good practice. I'm not sure if you're aware of the work of Mustafiz Uddin, because he has the sort of Bangladesh Apparel Exchange, and he's done a lot of work about trying to make the Bangladesh fashion industry more sustainable, and to also showcase those types of innovations, because I think we don't want to be in a position where we think all of the knowledge and the skills and the ability to do the right thing is only kind of, you know, isolated in one pair of hands, for example. So I think that there's good practice as well, but absolutely, you know, that there are structural issues, systemic issues that mean that, you know, different parts of the world in the global south have been historically exploited in the fashion industry, and there is a long way to go to redress that balance. But I mean, one of the things that I, you know, like to do through the education lens is to actually showcase people who are doing positive work, whether that's in social enterprise, whether that's in, you know, having innovative green, you know, initiatives and that type of thing as well. So there's definitely, you know, space for that, because I think people want to see a model of how to do things better. It's one thing to have the problems, they can feel extremely overwhelming, but also to find some examples where people are doing good work in this space and to celebrate those. And I think that's a role that fashion media can have, that they can actually, you know, diversify the voices that we hear from. So we're not just only hearing from the same people and the same examples and getting this sort of unbalanced view about who's doing, you know, good work in this space. So I just wanted to sort of pick up on that a little bit. And then absolutely the point about fashion and well-being, it's something that we're very interested in at the university, and I think because I have colleagues working in public health, it's actually a really interesting space for us to collaborate in research and teaching around this, the impact that our own personal fashion consumption you know, can have on us. And so, you know, thinking of ways that that can actually be more positive as well. So, you know, really, really interesting, you know, areas to talk about, very important and interesting areas. So thank you for raising those.
Thank you. And I would also like to know, like, I'm very new to the industry. My model is actually different. And I'm practicing sustainability in terms of design, in terms of production. How actually you would like to advise me to stay forward as a brand owner? Like, I'm totally working on sustainable fashion, sustainable modest fashion, and I'm totally new to the industry as an owner. So how would like to you'd like to advise me to step forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things, as I said, is to find the community space for sustainable fashion. So I do think, you know, the online space, you know, something like Instagram, there's a lot of people putting out, you know, informal education around this. So, you know, people like Fashion Revolution, people like Repair What You Wear, talking about sustainable fashion initiatives. And I think that's a really good space to be in, but also in your sort of local communities to actually reach out. I don't know where you're thinking about having clothes manufactured, but I know there's a few social enterprises based in London, for example, that can help with that kind of getting local manufacture and can support getting, you know, women into work who might not otherwise have work opportunities. So I think taking those kind of models of how can you have positive social impact on other people's lives through your fashion label at each stage is really important. And I think just putting that out there, connecting with people, having, you know, curious conversations, asking why is something like this, could it be like that, educating yourself about, you know, materials and impact and those types of things would be really interesting. But I think as well, you know, there are different events that might be interesting to be part of. I know I've been invited to be part of a panel next year in Manchester, MacFest, which I think you might find interesting because it's about bringing Muslim and non-Muslim communities together, promoting social inclusion and celebrating diversity. So, I mean, I think, you know, the UK is possibly a great place for some of those types of initiatives. So, I mean, I think definitely, and also another thing I would say is that reaching out beyond fashion, which clearly if your background isn't in fashion, you're already bringing in that different experience. But I've found it really rewarding to work with academics in different areas. So things like climate justice, but also one of my great collaborators at the moment is a woman called Halle Moravec, who she works in food nutrition. And we're looking at lots of ideas around food and fashion and sustainability. So I think, you know, finding your people that can be part of your kind of support network is really important, because it, as a business owner, it can be quite a lonely space. And I know there's a big communities, you know, within London to support women entrepreneurs as well. So I think, you know, we know one of the big issues in the industry is that it's harder for women to get finance for startups and etc. So there are a few initiatives around helping, you know, women entrepreneurs. So I definitely reach out and find out as much as you can from those different areas so that you can be socially, environmentally and financially sustainable.
Thank you so much. This is very much helpful for me. And as I was talking, I must ask for your help, and maybe I also need to ask for collaboration with British School of Fashion, because I'm totally new. I have to learn a lot. Thank you.
You are very welcome to come and have a conversation on campus when we're allowed to be there.
Thank you so much. So this is actually very much inspiring for me. Looks like I'm feeling empowered, because it's really lonely, and we really need support
as
entrepreneur. Yeah, and especially women from minority backgrounds suffer most for anything they want to do.
Yeah.
Okay. So as a professor from British School of Fashion, how actually you are promoting sustainability?
That's a great question. So my role, I mean, I'm a professor of marketing and sustainable business in the British School of Fashion. So I approach sustainability from a few different angles. So one is research. So as I said, I'm very interested in sustainable business models, things like social enterprise. So I found it really interesting over the years to work with a variety of different social enterprises to find out how they work, their motivations, how they do things differently, and how they kind of create value for all of their kind of partners. And that research I share through teaching. So one of the things that I've done at the British School of Fashion is to create a new module in sustainable luxury. We're just coming to the end of the term, and the students are, you know, asked to analyze the luxury industry, which includes fashion, you know, through the lens of the Sustainable Development Goals, and to look at things like how their own personal values and beliefs can intersect with that, and to, you know, to look at, you know, why things are as they are, to ask questions, what if, to look at, you know, innovations, and to kind of, I suppose, embody the changes that they'd like to see in the industry, and to recognize their own agency, you know, and the decisions that they can make in their personal, professional, academic life, and how those can promote sustainability. And then another thing, you know, is collaborating across disciplines, because I think, you know, it's such a complex area. There are so many different things involved in thinking about sustainability, climate justice, etc. And so, you know, I'm lucky at GCU to have colleagues who work in areas like climate justice, colleagues who work in sort of, you know, feminist economics, and all sorts of different areas that kind of intersect with the areas of activity. So that's a great opportunity. And I mentioned public health as well. So we have a lot of opportunities to design, you know, interesting research and teaching opportunities. But then also I consider myself a public academic. So being involved in today's podcast is another area where I can, you know, talk about sustainability, hopefully start some conversations, prompt people to think about things, reflect on their own, you know, habits and beliefs. So I think that I consider that part of my role as well.
Yeah, that's great to know. And I'm again saying it's a great opportunity for me, for my audience, to have you here. This is really insightful, and especially I'm feeling very good, because I have already got some very helpful information which will help me in my business, in my next steps. So have you any messages for brand owners, including the faith-based brand owners?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, I've already alluded to it, but I think curiosity is really important. I think conversation is important and collaboration. So I think those sort of things, you know, find out, you know, what you need to know about, find out about how to, you know, how to get financed, find out about materials, find out about how to get things produced ethically. What does that mean for you? Establish your own sort of brand values and your mission. What do you want to do with your business? Now, for me, I'm very interested in positive fashion. So what positive change do you want to make, you know, on the people working with you and on, for your consumers? And then try to embody that within your sort of business plan. And I think that goes across any type of fashion brand. And I think, you know, it's asking yourself why you want to do this thing and what can be the best expression of your creativity. And try to find some role models for yourself. Within the industry, the type of businesses that are doing work that you really appreciate and respect, and reach out and talk to them maybe and find out how you can add to that. So I think it's, you know, finding a creative community, being sort of curious and finding collaborators, because as you said, it can be quite lonely being a brand owner on your own. So I think those are that's sort of my message maybe.
Oh, great. And another point I would like to add here. I think influencers, fashion influencers, beauty influencers have a greater role to play here in terms of climate justice, sustainability or diversity. So what do you think about it?
Yeah, well, I mean, influencers, again, is a huge term. So, I mean, I think for me, it's more about trying to diversify the range of people that we hear from. And I think, especially with regard to climate justice, I mean, the voices of Indigenous people are the voices that should be represented, because although they're a small percentage of the world, they're responsible for sort of, you know, the safe custody of a lot of biodiversity. And that's one of the big sort of challenges in the climate and sustainable space. So I think, you know, in terms of where, if people are working in media, it's trying to surface some different voices. And I think in terms of if people are influencers themselves, then to consider what are the messages. So, you know, similar to what I said for brand owners, thinking about where do you want to put your positive energy? What values do you want to promote? And if you're promoting products and brands, feeling comfortable that those, you know, doing your homework and making sure that they're ones that you're comfortable promoting. And if you have, where you recognize where you have agency and power and trying to use it to help lift up other people.
Yeah, definitely. And today's episode is powered by Fashion Calls, which is a newly created label by me. And I would like to invite my audience who are listening today's episode. I would like to request them to check out my website, and I'm really open to any constructive suggestion, opinion and advice. I may make mistakes, so I would like to learn from others, from experts and from influencers, from consumers, whatever. So I'm open to any type of advice. And I would like to tell my audience again that my focus is sustainability and diversity and women empowerment, especially. And the ultimate goal was to promote women empowerment through fashion. So my clothing and accessories are for women and will be made by women, I hope so. And they will be made by artisans in UK, and the materials will be sourced from within UK. And all the fabrics will be either upcycled or pre-loved and leftover fabrics. So I'm actually at the primary stage, and I'm going to work on the production manufacturing stage. So at this stage, I would like to receive any types of advice or suggestions, so I can make it local, I can make it empowering and inclusive, and obviously sustainable.
That's great. Well, great aspirations. I can definitely put you in touch with some people to find out some more.
All right. Thank you. So thank you, ma'am, for your time. It's a really helpful, insightful for my audience, for me, and for brand owners and other fashion lovers. I hope people will learn, my audience will learn from you, and they will find it very much helpful. Thank you again for your cooperation and sharing such insightful information.
Thank you so much. Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, and good luck with the business.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you.